Hello, everybody, and welcome to Vodcast episode number 116. This episode is a VCR tape, so that means, you know, we go over an old game. This one is the 10th one, so tape number 10. And for this one, I'm just joined by podcast super regular now, I guess, Stephen.
I don't know if regular, I don't know. Yes, hi.
It is not an
I'm just always here.
Yes, well,
I'm
that's
just
what I mean.
Obligatory like, podcast person.
But you're like a series regular. Like, you're not a recurring...
I'm a starring member.
No, but, you know, it's not like you'll be... You wouldn't be also starring. You would be, you know, starring. Like...
Oh, well, that's
if
nice.
It was a TV show, if that makes sense.
Thank you.
Anyway.
now that we got that out of the way.
So, now, yeah, we've got contractual obligations out of the way. The game for this fortnight is Kirby Canvas Curse. So... We decided to pick this one because Kirby and the Rainbow Curse is out now in America, and since we can't talk about that, we figured we might as well talk about this.
The best we can do.
Yes, we would play it, but we can't. Like, even if we imported it, it would be impossible without spending $400 more, and I don't want to do that.
Buy a US Wii U. Start that joke again.
Yeah. we'll jump straight back into it. With this game, it was a little bit weird because there wasn't a lot of development history, out there. So I had a lot of trouble trying to fill this segment with stuff. And that's something I should quickly say about this episode is it's probably going to be short because there's little details about this game that you can really, really dive into.
Can't really discuss the story in depth or anything like that.
Yeah. So basically, I think that the best thing to talk about at first was like the kind of the context of how this game was put together. Before this game came out in 2005, which was, by the way, I think a year after the DS came out.
Yeah, close to it.
Yeah, Nintendo, and I guess to a lesser extent Namco, were kind of... They both experimented with games that were basically touch-only, more or less, with Yoshi's Touch and Go and Pac-Pix. I think it was called Pac-Pix.
Yeah, actually, I think it was called Pac-Pix here and, like, Pac and Roll elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this one was called Canvas Curse here, but in... No, Canvas Curse... Oh, wait. It was called Canvas Curse
Cursed
somewhere.
Canvas. I think it's Cursed Canvas in the US and Canvas Curse here.
But then there's Power Paintbrush in Europe or something.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm completely wrong.
Yeah.
Why is it just Kirby games that have weird, like, regional names? Because Rainbow Paintbrush is doing the same thing.
Yeah, because apparently non-American audiences are not into curses. It has to be all about the paintbrush. I don't know. It's bizarre. But, I mean, I'd never actually played Yoshi Touch and Go or Pac-Pix. Did you, Stephen?
I played a fair bit of Touch and Go. I never bought it, but I borrowed a friend's copy back when the DS came out, and it was pretty much the only game to play on the system. And
yeah.
It just sort of felt like a tech demo that they just expanded into a game so they could sell it.
Because
there was no eShop at the time.
From what I could see, like by going through, you know, old reviews and stuff, like people were like, oh, this is really cool, you know, the touch screen is justified. And then they were like, but this doesn't feel like a game that is full price.
Yeah, exactly. It felt like a thing that you'd put, you know, a couple of dollars into an arcade machine and play, then you're done with it in a couple of minutes and you move on. It was not something that you could sit with and play for hours on end.
Yeah,
but but then you're a bit weird. Sorry,
wow.
Friends.
Sorry if anyone played Touch and Go for a few hours.
Like, I was one of them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it again, though.
Wow. it was... And then Pac-Fix came out, and that was another one where, you know, it was kind of like, you know, they were taking their mascot, twisting them, I guess, and
didn't you, like,
changing...
draw a Pac-Man on the screen?
Yeah. I never played these two games. Like, I kind of feel stupid now because... I remember, and this is the thing as well, like, Daniel used to always go on about how good, like, Pac-Pix was or whatever, and I was like, yeah, whatever, shh, just brush it to the side, and, like, yeah, I just kind of wish I did just in preparation for this, but, yeah, the games, like, those two games happened, and they were, like, from what I remember of Yoshi especially, they didn't completely, like, sell on their premises, but then... How, I guess, put out Kirby Canvas Curse, and that was from... I mean, I think, personally, it's pretty good.
I think it was the first game that took the touchscreen interface and made it into an actual... I guess, sort of took a traditional platformer and then fused it with the touchscreen, as opposed to just having a, you know, look what we can do with the touchscreen. This was an actual compelling game around the touchscreen.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, I think back then, it was, you couldn't have done that game on anything else. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Off the top of my head. Now, it could probably be easily done on anything, really.
I mean, what doesn't have a touchscreen at this point?
Yeah. but I think that in that regard, it was probably one of the first games that I think would have been something that really sold the concept of the touchscreen. I mean, this is the thing, like, I was not paying attention to the DS back in the day. Like, I got one really...
Oh, how couldn't you? It was exciting.
I know, and I went to school with Vuk's brother and stuff, so, like, I should have been, but I was so late to the DS thing. I bought, like, a light so long after.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, weird, hey. But, yeah, I don't really know...
Well, it's, I mean, as weird as it is, like, as much as I had a DS on launch day, I still hadn't played Canvas Curse up until this week.
Oh, like, wow.
I just had never seen a copy in stores. Oh. Yeah, I've owned it for about a year and a half, but I just never got around to it. So this was a good opportunity.
I mean, I think that this is, and Canvas Curse, I might be wrong, but it's the first Kirby game that was kind of experimented with, because I think that we've talked about this before, is how Nintendo kind of try and use Kirby in different ways.
I think there were, like, back on the Game Boy Color, wasn't there Kirby Tilt and Tumble, which was, like, motion control?
There was a mini golf, I think.
On Super NES.
SNES, yeah.
That game's great.
Yeah, I guess it's not the first one then, but I do think that this is Kirby is a really weird franchise. Like, Nintendo already has so many platformers and stuff that they kind of, I guess, are trying to make Kirby a little bit more different. Like, he does so many different things. Like, you know, Epic Yarn, for example.
Yeah, can be transplanted into so many different, you know, visual looks and types
of
games.
He's so versatile.
Yeah, I mean, he's a blob. He's basically just a blank slate with a face.
So that's like, I mean, it came out to pretty good reviews from what I could see.
Got like a 9 on Metacritic at the moment. Like,
yeah.
Even with, I guess, somewhat more recent reviews, they're all, everyone still loves it.
Yeah, and I still think it stands up overall. But I'm interested to see how the Wii U one plays, which... I mean, I haven't looked up much stuff on it yet because I want to kind of go into it, you know, blind.
Mm.
I'd be interested to see. But we will talk about that later on, about, I guess, where this
concept
ends up. Yeah. I mean, quickly we'll go over the story. There's not a lot we can talk about because it is a Kirby game. Basically, a strange portal appears over Dreamland.
Gosh.
Sorry. And this crazy witch named Drosha. I'm trying to say it like, is it like Marsha, but...
You know, maybe?
Drosha? I don't know.
Let's go with that.
Yeah. She casts a spell over Dreamland, turns it into a world of paintings, I guess.
Paintings.
Kirby chases after her, but he's cursed and turned into a ball, which is the worst fate ever. He has no hands,
his legs, and hands.
Yes. And a magical paintbrush somehow, he says to us, the player, to help Kirby out of his predicament. So, I guess the only thing I really like about this story is it kind of gives justifiability. It justifies the way the game plays.
Honestly, I didn't pay attention to the story at all. I kind of forgot that it was even there.
Don't you need to know why you're rolling through all these pretty worlds?
Because I have a smile on my face and everything's happy.
Yeah, well, about that. It's just a pretty simple story. I don't think I've ever played a Kirby game where the story has shocked or interested me.
No, that's never the point, I don't think. It's just an excuse to go from left to right, usually.
It definitely is not, no. As I said, you know, this episode is probably going to be kind of short because we have so little to talk about. So that means we'll jump straight into the gameplay of the game design. So, as you'd imagine, because Kirby has been turned into a ball, he can't actually walk or jump or float. I don't even think he can float. I think he can float with a power-up, but I don't think he can actually...
Yeah, there's like a balloon power-up.
Yeah, like he can't do his, you know, his trademark annoying Smash Bros.
His great Smash Bros. Flying.
Yeah. And the idea is that, you know, you're controlling... You're not actually controlling Kirby. You're controlling the magic paintbrush. which can...
That was the weirdest part for me, because I started up the game and it looks like a platformer, but I can't control the character directly at all. Like, you can just control everything around him and you just kind of... You're trying very much to convince him to do what you want, but you can't make him do anything.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, it's not really, but it is. Like, it gives me, you know, kind of like Lemmings, where you've got to, they're moving, like, all the time. Like, you've just got to change their path. So it's got that kind of puzzly element to it.
I think that's actually a pretty good comparison. Like, yeah, you just are a weird, omniscient god being that just makes the world change around them, and, you know, Kirby just keeps moving with momentum because that's what balls do.
Yeah, and I don't know if he's happy about that or not, but, like...
He has a smile. He's always happy. Except when
America.
He's angry.
I was going to say, not in America. So the idea is like, you know, you use the rainbow paintbrush to, you can tap Kirby to accelerate him, you can tap enemies to stun them and get them ready to be attacked, and you can draw lines with the paintbrush, which Kirby then, you know, follows. So basically that you can modify, I guess, the level geometry kind of using that. So if you really wanted to, you could draw a wall in front of Kirby to make him stop. Or if you wanted to make him jump up, you can make a ramp. Or if you wanted him to kind of approach the next area with more speed without tapping him, I don't know why, but you could draw a hill so that he would be going down that to build speed.
Yeah, that tapping is pretty much the only direct like control that you have of Kirby. You just kind of nudge him along.
And generally speaking, I think, like let's, I guess, start off with the controls and stuff. I think that it works pretty well. I do think that perhaps the game has been made a little bit more forgiving as a result, which is weird to say because most Kirby games are already pretty forgiving.
That is pretty much a Kirby thing. I think, like most Kirby games, it's fairly easy to get to the end, but there's a lot of other things that you can do on the way if you want to challenge yourself a bit more, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, like collecting stuff and all that. And I guess that's where most of the challenge, which I use very loosely, comes from. This is something that we were just talking about quickly before was, you know, the enemies. I feel like the enemies are less of a hindrance in this game because of this, because, like, you know, you can't jump on them, you don't have any control, and it's very possible that you might just, like, you know, slowly roll into them. But I kind of found that even when you do that, like, they still die. They're really easy to kill.
Yeah, they still die, but they still hurt you as well. And I found that sort of put me off a bit at the start, but once I got used to either tapping them to have them ready to be destroyed or, you know, building up speed to attack them, it didn't hurt me too much. It was mostly like environmental hazards, like spikes and stuff, where I wasn't quick enough to draw a path underneath so he wouldn't fall down a hole or get hit by spikes or something like that.
Yeah, and then, you know, that's it, he dies.
Yeah.
And then you have to go back. But it's... I kind of thought, you know, when I... My memory of this game was much more faster, if that makes sense. Like, I imagine this game being faster than it was. Like, I really thought that, you know, you'd be swinging through it, like, in, like, Sonic-esque.
Yeah, I actually had that thought as well. Like, when I first started playing it, I was, you know, doing the weird, like, the loop-de-loops to gain speed and thinking I'd be rolling around at the speed of sound. But it's a lot more, I guess, contemplative, I guess, is probably a weird way to describe it. But it's a lot more slow-paced and relaxed, I guess, as far as platformers go.
Relaxed. I wouldn't say contemplative is just so...
You can sit back
so
and think
wanky
about your surroundings. Like, well,
people,
that's just
people
me.
People say that, like, Steel Diver Sub Wars is a contemplative shooter. And I'm like...
Really? I'll contemplate shooting you, but I won't really.
No, like, while you're waiting for the torpedo to slowly drift through the sea to
just think about your inevitable doom.
Yeah, just have an existential thought about life while you're waiting for it to hit. But yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it, though. Like, it is a little bit more... it's hard to explain. Like, I wouldn't say it's slower paced, because I still think, like, as you said, like, if you miss a gap, like, you die.
But you have to be on the ball in a lot of sections, yeah, if there's... those gaps are basically what got me.
But, yeah, it's just a weird game, like, to try and explain simply.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the simple explanation, you draw a path, it goes on it, but there's just so much that happens around that and it's really interesting. It was different to what I thought it would be. I had, as I say, a similar
similar thoughts that it'll be a bit more fast-paced, and I think the marketing showed it being a bit more fast-paced as well, but it was, yeah, a lot slower and more. You had to think about how you were going through that level and plan ahead a little bit, but you still had to have your reflexes on you as well.
I think the other thing as well that I really... like, when people told me about this game, I was like, sounds really... like, it could be really gimmicky. But I feel like throughout this whole game, I mean, I don't know how far you got, Stephen. I mean, I know, I admit that I didn't finish it. but, like, you go through a lot of different areas and a lot of variety in, like, the situations and stuff you're presented with. So it does feel a little bit less... it doesn't feel as gimmicky as it could.
Like, yeah, they definitely sort of keep adding new elements to it as you go. Like, if the first world was, like, the typical tutorial-ish greens where it's just get to the end of the level, but then you've got areas where you've got to be pressing switches to unlock areas back where you came from, and then you, like, have a weird web of a maze that you've kind of explored through opening up different sections, and like underwater parts as well. I didn't love them, but they were there. And
underwater parts, I didn't really love them heaps either, but I liked how they kind of changed how the physics and stuff worked. And like, you know, in most games, you know, a swimming world or whatever, you know, kind of have an idea of how it will control, but with this you didn't really until you jumped in and you were like, oh.
Yeah, because it's like another thing where you don't have actual control over Kirby, so you just, instead of him falling onto a path that you've drawn, you kind of have to wait for him to slowly float onto it, and then he just kind of rolls down it if you've drawn it at the right angle. It took a lot to get used to me.
Yeah, and I guess, and then, you know, each of the levels and stuff culminates in a boss battle. Did you experience a boss battle more than once?
Yeah, Steven? I went through and actually did all three of the boss battles twice, because it like changes the second time. It like gets them to level two, so they're slightly different each time. I thought they were really kind of cool. Like, some of them were cool.
My thing, right? Like, I think that they were cool, but I really wish they didn't reuse them.
Yeah, the variations at level two of the bosses are not enough to make it play any differently. I did exactly the same thing, just had to hit them more times, or, you know, had different enemies on the way.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, looking, like, very briefly looking at the Wii U one that's coming out later this year for us, they kind of fixed that, which is good. But I was a bit that was anything that I like found kind of truly disappointing.
We should probably touch on what the boss battles are. When you get to the end of a world, you get, it's weird, you get a choice of three different boss possibilities. One of them is his name Krakko, the big cloud with the eye and the spikes.
Krakon or Krakko?
I think it's Krakko. Yeah,
feel like we should know this by now. We've been playing Kirby. I've literally been playing Kirby my entire life.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same.
I know the tree is named... oh, wait.
Wispy Woods.
Which doesn't make sense, because I feel like it should be just one name. That sounds like a plural. But I think it is Krak. It's Kraken or Krakko.
Krak something. Krak addict. But yeah, that boss level, it's like, it's kind of like Breakout or Alleyway, that if anyone's not familiar, it's the one where you, like, you bounce the ball around the stage and it sort of breaks bricks at the top and just kind of keep paddling it back up. But like, you have to hit enemies and you paddle, you draw it as you need it, and you can make Kirby go in different directions. And once you defeat all the enemies on a screen, then you move up to the next one, and then Krak, whatever he is at the top, and yeah, you just got to fight him in the same way. And I thought it was kind of cool. It was something that wouldn't be interesting for an entire game, but it was a cool little distraction at the end of a world.
Yeah, and then you've got the one with I think it is the DD, right? Like on the cart thing.
Yeah, you've got, I always, like, say DDD, but DDD, 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 DDD,
dead, dead,
dead, dead, dead.
Yeah,
but yes, that one. The
and you've got to, like,
race.
Draw the lines and stuff underneath. You're on this, like, there's a plane underneath almost, and you've got to, like, draw underneath each thing and collect items and stuff. And
yeah, you collect like food items to go faster and beat him to the end and avoid enemies who will
But I think that, like, the bosses and stuff are, like, as I said, you know, Jungle Beat kind of did the same thing where it reuses bosses, and I don't really like when they do that in games.
That's a good point. Yeah, I didn't really think about that, but yeah, you're definitely
like,
right.
Like, you know, they just change the colour of something, and they're like, oh, yeah, it was his brother. And
yeah. So, yeah, like, sure it is.
And he fights more violently, but he's the same battle fundamentally.
Mm.
I mean, I kind of get the vibe that maybe this was a tech demo that was expanded eventually. And that's why they kind of had to cut corners with this kind of stuff, but
I think maybe it was just that they only had so many ideas as to how to do boss battles that are only touch, maybe.
Yeah. But I mean, as I like said at the very beginning of this episode, like, you know, it was pretty early on in the console's life, so maybe they hadn't really worked everything out yet, and they wanted to chuck something out there.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, it was a hell of a lot more interesting than Touch and Go on a lot of the other tech demos that came before it, so it's...
Yeah.
I definitely would say it's worthy of being called a full game rather than just a weird little thing to tide you over.
Mm. And then, you know, as the game itself is the, like, they kind of try and spice things up with the copy abilities, which in this one are pretty standard. You've got Balloon, Beam, Burning, Crash, Freeze, Missile, Needle, Spark, Stone, Tornado, and Wheel. My favourite was the Balloon because I felt like I was playing a Kirby game again.
I hated the Balloon.
Oh, really?
I just felt like I was floating and I couldn't really do anything while I was floating.
I mean, I totally admit that it was really jarring to go from, you know, that kind of regular sense of momentum as you move through the levels and stuff, but then I just... As I said, like, I liked playing it because it was like I was playing old Kirby again. Because I like this game, but I just really like old Kirby.
Yeah, fair enough. I think I liked, the Wii was probably one of my favourites, and that's one of my favourites in all of them because, I don't know, it's just fun to go really fast. But there was another one.
That's the Sonic fan in you, yeah, really, a little bit. Isn't it?
But the second favourite one would be the Needle ability, because that one, it makes a needle stick out, but if you're on a path, it makes you sort of go quickly along that path, and you could use that to gain more momentum and get up to new areas, or, you know, and you'd be somewhat invincible while you're doing that because you got the spikes out. And yeah, it was just a cool way to keep your momentum going while not being worrying about it being attacked.
Yeah, and I mean. Actually, most of the powers are kind of the same in that regard. Like, I kind of feel like most of them did the same thing. Like, they kind of give you a little bit of invulnerability, let you attack. Like, Burning and Spark, for example.
I liked Spark. There were some levels where you could see it was very much designed for you to have Spark. Like, there are a whole bunch of destructible blocks above you that you could just destroy them all with a big lightning attack.
Yes. And that's one thing I don't like about this game sometimes is I feel like it can be a little bit unforgiving. Like, because I'm somebody who really wants to go through each level and collect everything that first time. Like,
yes.
Maybe that's just an achievement whore kind of thing. but it's just, you know, it's hard if you don't have all those abilities or you lose one.
You kind of have to give up while you're ahead at some point.
Yeah, like you kind of lose. You've got to start again or whatever to go back in with your with that ability. So it's just that's the only thing I don't like. But I guess the idea of all these collectibles and stuff is to encourage you to replay and stuff. So maybe that's why.
Yeah, I think that definitely the replay was a big part of it because you got all those bronze medals you can collect and those you can use to unlock stuff like Music Test, which was kind of boring. But there's also like new game modes and stuff. I didn't get to try them, but you can unlock them with those medals. And there were also, once you'd beaten a world, you were able to open that world in like there was a time trial mode and a line trial mode. Like time trial let you obviously, you know, get to the end as fast as you could, but line trial gave you a limited amount of ink to play with to get to the end of the level. I played a couple of levels like that and it was just an interesting new way to look at it because I was normally just drawing lines everywhere I could just because I can, but when you have to really think about every line that you draw, it really changes the way you play it.
Yeah, and that would be hard. That's something that would really strike me as being hard to balance because some people are just less efficient at, you know, drawing lines than other people would be.
Yeah,
so
it's one where you just really have to be a certain type of person or get into a certain mindset to use it, whereas I thought they balanced the regular game pretty well. Like, I only seemed to run out of ink when I was using it far too much, and I knew that.
Like, it never seemed like I ran out where I needed it.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I just don't know what you mean. Yeah, and I mean, I think that it's good in that regard. Like, as you said, it was balanced. They didn't really... Like, it could have easily just been, you know, just keep building an infinite loop, build up ridiculous amounts of speed, and then just go flying.
Or you could just fly across the whole level like every other Kirby game.
Yeah, I guess. Well, no, not that I do. I don't do that. That's boring.
I know. But you can if you want to.
Yeah, well, that would still be boring, but yes, I guess you can. It just sucks because, like, there's not a lot of stuff on the internet about this game. Like, it's... And you can't really get some insight into how they developed it or made it and stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. It sort of was out at the time. Like, if there was anything development-wise about it, it would all be in some obscure magazine issue that hasn't been, you know, hasn't seen light of day in a decade.
Yeah, like, there was no, like, what it asks about it or anything. There was no what it asks about Kirby's Dream Land, which talked about... Oh, wow. The Wii one, sorry.
Oh, right.
Which talked about, you know, the three missing games that they kind of tried to develop for Kirby between then and now, but nothing else. Like, it was really bizarre. But, I mean, I hate to cut it short so quickly, but I think, like, we've exhausted everything about the gameplay for this game. Because, like, I really did think when we randomly picked to do this one, 2 weeks ago, like, we thought we would get heaps more out of it. But it's just such a simplistic concept.
Yeah, there's not much to what you do in the game. There's, you sort of play around with the same core set of, you know, moves and mechanics, but you play around with them in a lot of different ways, but... Yeah, the actual action of what you do is pretty consistent throughout the game, so there's not much to really say that we haven't already talked about.
Yeah. So I guess with that note, on that note, we will go to a quick break and we'll return to talk about the game's presentation. Kirby games. This one is super colourful, super cheery. I guess I've heard some people use the word chipper to describe it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, chipper.
Yeah. And I think the one thing that I've noticed with Kirby games a lot is, like, they kind of each have a distinct style to them. Most of them generally the same, but then when they do branch out, they go for a visual style and really go all the way with it. So, like, this one's very, like, it's full of watercolors. Epic Yarn was more, you know, material and stuff, and Rainbow Curse looks like it's going to be a lot more about clay. So, I mean, this, I guess, you know, as we said before, the story kind of gives it, like, justification for looking like a painting.
Yeah, I do think they really sort of ran with that idea. Like, the first world was obviously the, as I was saying before, kind of the boring, generic Kirby world, but the moment you get into the later levels, they really play around with the painting aspect, and there were some that were, like, pure black and white levels, and they looked really cool. And, yeah, I'd say some of the watercolors and... I think impressionist paintings, I'm not an artist, but yeah, just it all just had really cool sort of visual styles that I can't identify, but I liked.
Yeah, it looks like, once again, I just feel like the animations and stuff just brimming, like, with personality. All the enemies and stuff, when you tap them to stun them, they look really cute, yeah. Like, it's very...
So I don't want to hurt you.
Yeah, you feel bad. You're like, are these guys bad guys, or is Kirby just being a dick? Like, and it is. It's just so... all of the Kirby games just exude charm. And this one was definitely no exception.
I was actually reading some old reviews, and people were complaining that there was no 3D in it, but this game could not have...
Why would you...
I think just because at that point, everything was like... it was in that weird time when because the DS could do 3D, every game had to be 3D, otherwise people would be disappointed.
Yeah, but then I'm so glad they didn't. I was going to say, like, you know, as we know, like, 3D on DS has not aged well at all.
No.
Like, I feel like, yeah, it's just like, I'm at Super Mario 64 DS.
I swear that looks almost, like, worse than the N64 one, maybe.
Yeah, well, maybe because you play 64-bit emulator, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But that might be why. But it's just, yeah, I think that they did well. Like, they updated it from, like, Game Boy Advance graphics and stuff were... You know, there's not really too much more you can do with this kind of art style, but I think they did the best that they could.
Yeah, it kind of looked as good as it possibly could on sort of that type of screen. I imagine what they could do with Kirby with high res. Obviously, they're doing clay this time, but I'm just sort of imagining how nice it could look if they did this kind of, I guess, would you describe it as like a pencil-y art style? I don't really know how to describe it, but this kind of art style in high res could be really nice.
It's not- Yeah, I don't... I mean, this is the thing. Like, I haven't seen raw footage of, say, Rainbow Curse, so I don't know how that runs. Like, and watching it on YouTube or... No, actually, I've never even watched it on YouTube. I've only watched it in, like, shitty, compressed Nintendo Direct streams that usually are bad and cut out. But, yeah, I think it probably could look better, like, in HD and stuff, but...
It does look really nice, so like, especially I was playing it on the DSi XL, and just that screen, it makes everything that uses pixel art, it really emphasizes the size of the pixels, and everything looks really nice on that screen, and this game definitely, you know, is no exception.
Mm-hmm. I think that, like, and then, you know, we move on to the sound, which is... Kirby's really weird for me, like, in terms of, like, music and stuff. Like, I enjoy it, but it gets really grating on me after a while, and I have to kind of stop.
Really?
Like, just...
Oh, I can't get enough of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I feel the same with Triple Deluxe, which I've been playing, you know, since Christmas, more intently, is, yeah, it, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is really cute, it gets me into the mood and stuff, but then after a while, yeah, I just... really over it.
I think maybe I had to push past that whole idea because I had to play through DDD's Drum Dash for review, and I think I'm immune to Kirby music annoying me at this point.
That's reasonable. And with this game, it uses a lot of... maybe this is just because, you know, it's a Kirby game, but a lot of the music was familiar, and I think a lot of the music is remixed from older games as well.
I think almost all of it is. It's all... I'm pretty sure... Most of the music I recognise from an earlier Kirby game, and Kirby, it generally has the same, a couple of, you know, a fair few melodies, but they are fairly well repeated throughout all the games.
Yeah, and I mean, that's not a bad thing.
Oh, no.
I mean, with Kirby, when you think about it, like, they kind of repeat, like, you know, there's always a, whatever is that, Wispy Woods or whatever. He's almost always a boss. Krakow, the skull, the cloud thing is always a boss almost all the time. They do reuse a lot of stuff throughout the games.
Although I'll say that at least whenever they reuse Wispy Woods, like in, I guess, the more experimental Kirby games, at least it's more interesting than the times you have to fight the Reznors 12 times in Mario Bros.
Yeah, that is fair enough.
Usually they
keep
those same enemies, but if the game is doing something a bit more different than a standard platformer, they usually keep the same bosses but change up the way that you fight them, which I think it's good.
Keeps
things familiar.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, I almost feel like, you know, it's like kids playing. Like, when they're playing their game, like, they pick a bad team or a good team and they battle each other, but then, you know, when we're not watching them play the game, like in Dreamland or whatever, they're all friends almost, because, you know, they all seem to be together all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Kirby it's really weird.
Imagine if you've just uncovered, like, the deeply rooted Kirby lore that has been hidden for centuries.
When they bring out the Kirby Historia book, we will know all about it.
They'll source us as the first.
Yes. No, but, like, I just, yeah, it's really weird. Like, it's the only game I feel that way about from Nintendo. Like, I don't feel like Mario and Bowser and stuff, you know, are friends behind the scenes. Like, they're bad.
They play golf together.
Yeah, I guess. No, that's a good point. But that's for the camera, so you know what's going on behind. They need to do, like, an e-reality TV series.
Mario.
Yeah, keeping up with the Mushroomians.
The Marios.
Anyway, we have gone completely off topic. But I think that this is probably my second favourite of the Kirby games.
Oh, man, I don't even know where I could put it. I can't spring these questions on me.
I mean, my favouritest one ever, which is probably, I think this might be controversial, but I don't know, is Mass Attack. Mass Attack, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Mass. I just love that game. I love the idea of, like, you know, creating 20 Kirbys and getting them to just beat the shit out of something. Like, it's just, it's like this juxtapositioning of, like, this really cute little dude thing. And, like,
and then
you
they
know,
just
this
beat
violent,
the crap out of
them. Yeah, like, gang wars and, like, gang crime. Like,
oh, they should have a Kirby RTS, like, real-time strategy where everything is a Kirby. And you just send armies of Kirbys at each other.
They should, like, Fire Emblem mixed with Kirby.
Oh, man, that'd be great.
Yeah, use your Kirby amiibo to unlock Kirby. Mass Attack is probably my favorite of them all.
I should really play Mass Attack in that case.
Yeah, I can't even play. Have you not played it?
I played it a bit. I bought it on launch day, but I played it, like, for one day, and then something else was out, and I guess I stopped playing it.
It's just so fun. Like, maybe I'm remembering it wrong again, sorry, but, like, it just felt so fast and, like, you know, as I said, like, intense. Like, you've got all these crazy Kirbys and stuff, and you use them to do whatever you want. You just felt so powerful in it. And then 64 was good. Oh. One thing I love about 64 that I don't really understand why they never brought back properly is how you could mix the powers.
Oh, yes, yeah, that.
Like,
I like the 64 one, and that's definitely the best part of it, but apart from that, it's very slow and, I don't know, boring, I guess, in comparison. But the fact that you can combine ice and electric to make a fridge is kind of amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember thinking it was so cool you could combine, like, fire and kata to make a fire sword and stuff. Like,
yeah.
It was just,
or, like,
really
I think
cool stuff.
Fire and sword, was it? And you turn into, like, a big flaming bird thingy.
Oh, I do not remember that.
I don't know. But it just seems like the fact that it's all these ones, I'm used to only being able to use one of them, and then, like, holy crap, there's so many combinations, I have to try all of them. I'm sure there weren't that many in the end, but it was still, you know, super exciting when I played it.
And, I mean, and then Triple Deluxe is probably my favourite because it's a classic one, and, you know, it really just hones that, I guess, normal classic Kirby formula. There's nothing majorly new introduced. It just goes back to basics.
Mm.
And then, you know, Rainbow Curse, which is coming out at the, well, I think May for us now. I'm not sure. I could be wrong. That, from what I've read, like, in what it asks about that game, and, you know, people were saying that they really liked the fact that with the gamepad, it's bigger, so they can make it more fast-paced. So I think that maybe Rainbow Curse will be a much more fast-paced version of Canvas Curse.
Yeah, quite probably, because there's a lot, as you say, there's a lot more space so you can see things coming up and have more time to react to them, whereas here, if you're going fast, then you're just going to knock into something because you couldn't see it ahead.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, like, I just think that it's a cool series. I'm interested to see where Nintendo takes it after this. I mean, I think that with stuff like Canvas Curse, you would never, it's just a weird, like, it's such a weird concept, and I don't think they could have really done it with any of their other, franchises.
No, yeah, like, as I say, Kirby can just be really anything, literally, so it's super versatile to play around with and just screw around with new ideas.
Yeah. And I was reading, I mean, it's like, we are going slightly off topic now, but there's not much more to talk about. Is like, and I was reading, you know, they did try and do, like, a fully 3D game, though, like, with Kirby, kind of like, and they showed screenshots and stuff and everything in one of these What It Asks articles. And
is this one on DS?
No, they were talking about the Wii one, but before they talked about that, they talked about why it took so long to come out. Because remember, they announced it for GameCube.
Yeah, I do remember that, and really wanted it, and then it just never happened.
It took ages to come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's because apparently they made, like, 3 Kirby games and scrapped them all between then and that time and now. And one of them was a fully 3D, you know, it looked like Super Mario 3D World on Wii U, like, with Kirby, but they couldn't get the same vibe from it, I guess. Another one became Kirby's Air Ride, and something else became, what's the other one? I can't even remember. It came out, though.
Oh, man. Kirby. There's, like, Epic Yarn, there's Adventure Wii, what else was there?
There was something else, I swear, but I can't remember what it was. Actually, the funny thing is Nintendo calls this a pen action game. That's what they, they call it.
This new burgeoning genre.
Yeah, it's pen action, just like they called Metroid Prime first-person adventure.
First-person adventure. It's not a shooter.
No, it's not. But, yeah, I mean, I think that Canvas Curse is still pretty good. I think that, you know, they're... And I watched, like, a few old videos on YouTube and stuff of this, and people were, like, so angry at it. Like, one guy was like, it's just... It's so disappointing that, you know, it's just not like classic Kirby and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, but if you had had this many Kirby games that were classic Kirby now, you would be over it so hard.
Like I said, it'd be the new Super Mario Bros. Of Kirby.
Yeah.
I mean, those people Kirby's that wanted a more traditional one eventually got Superstar Ultra, I guess, which is probably the best traditional Kirby game, one of at
even
least.
Even though it's a remake. But it's just a weird complaint. I don't know why you wouldn't want them to innovate.
I guess they're all... Wasn't there, like, Amazing Mirror and Squeak Squad as well?
Yeah,
and then all these weird handheld Kirby games I could never find in stores.
Yeah, those Game Boy Advance ones, yeah, that were free with the... I think I got one of them for the Ambassador for 3DS. And they're not amazing. They're just so... They're just there.
Yeah,
and
Kirby
I think
games.
I think that's why they really wanted to try and change things up. And, you know, they probably saw, you know, Touch and Go and Pack Picks and said, well, maybe we can do something like this, but better. And they did, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
Good.
Oh, what if I had disagreed?
No, you don't want to
track
know.
Me down. No,
yeah.
You roll into me violently as a wheel.
Yes, pretty much. They should make, you know, that movie Rubber about that tire that just rolls around and kills people.
Just make that, but Kirby.
Make that with Kirby. Yeah, be perfect.
Well,
but yeah, I think that we're probably at the end of this very short episode.
Clearly,
of the
we've
forecast.
Exhausted everything when we're talking about Kirby Rubber parodies.
And yeah, we should probably go out on a high. So we'll go to a quick break, and we'll just return to wrap up the episode. And we're back. So on the homepage, we've got, since the last episode, I may be repeating stuff, but we've definitely got a Majora's Mask review, a DDD's Drum Dash Deluxe review, whatever.
The big duck.
It's a penguin, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Isn't he a penguin? I think he's a penguin. Anyway, and Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate review. So those two reviews especially were written by Steven, so... Pat on yourself on the back, Stephen. I'm glad that you made that audible.
I did. Just for the audience.
And then we also have a new web series, which Flame or Daniel is doing. You guys probably remember him from this podcast. But he's called Touching is Good, and it basically goes over... I think the idea is to go over DS stuff...
Yeah,
fortnightly.
Just pretty. I don't know how regularly it's going to be.
Apparently, it's going to be fortnightly, and it's going to be the weeks that we're not on.
Okay.
So hopefully that sticks, because it would be nice, to have, I guess, that pressure relieved off of us.
We're not the only ones entertaining the masses.
Yes, with our dulcet tones.
Yeah, as you might have noticed back when he was more regular on the podcast, Daniel really, really, really loves the DS. So, yeah, he's got a lot planned there.
Yes, I can imagine. That is it for another fortnight. We apologise once again that it's short. We thought it would be more, but it's not. But we return... Actually, I don't even know what next fortnight... Oh, Mario Party. So,
we'll
return... Next fortnight, with the regular episode, so we'll be recapping the news, and we'll be going over Mario Party 10. I'm sure we will be talking about amiibos, because, you know, there will be more.
There's always amiibos to talk about.
Tune in next time. If, as always, you know, make sure you like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter, leave us a review on iTunes, and as I always say, positive or negative, as long as you're constructive, I am happy to receive both. Yes. The website is www.fooks.net, and just give us a visit if you want or not. It's okay.
It's up to you. We won't force you.
Yeah. And don't forget, if you haven't subscribed to the episode yet, make sure you do, because subscribers get the episodes early. So, that's it for another fortnight. We will see you in 2 weeks' time for Mario Party, and yeah.
It will be a true party.
Truly. Have a good one.
Bye.